Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 295.
This week on the podcast, the truth is not the truth when it comes to Puerto Rico.
And we've got your first official correct reading of the recent primary results.
Plus, Donald Trump gave Omarosa the power to destroy him, but lucky for him, it's good for ratings.
And we've said it before and we'll say it again. Don't go to war with the deep state.
Plus, we found our generation's John Dean.
And the truth is the truth when it comes to Donald Trump. He just doesn't know how to find it.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right.
Before we dive in, I've had a story that I have been dying to tell everyone since
been waiting for this podcast
this weekend.
For
so
days.
I mean, this was only I think this was last night that this happened to me, but I'm
good thing we didn't record yesterday.
I mean, oh no, it was Saturday night. I forgot today's Monday. In any case. I, right after the 2016 elections, was walking down the street in New York, in Chelsea, where I grew up, and saw this weird float that said Trump really big and has like a bunch of American flags and looks like real rinky-dink. Like someone was like, felt so strongly about Trump that they got their weird, you know, hauling bed out and decided to build a float for themselves for Trump. Just driving down 6th Avenue or 7th Avenue in New York.
Right. By your house.
By my house. And I thought, this is terrifying. This is exactly what I would think an authoritarian government would be like, where you would just see, like, I mean, it is sort of like that because you see Trump's name everywhere because he's put his name on every building in America.
Right.
So, like, it's like when you go to Chicago and you're going down the river and there's that big Trump building where you're like, this feels creepy and authoritarian. I don't like this. It felt like that where I was like, they're getting me everywhere.
Yeah.
This is a safe place. This is New York City.
Right.
This is the place that had where he got the worst turnout of almost anywhere.
Yeah.
Don't have this Trump float in my face. Well, flash to August of 2018, Saturday night, I'm heading home, you know, turning in for the evening.
Sure.
Driving up Fairfax in one of the most trafficy parts of Fairfax, which is that little Ethiopia.
Blocks away from your house.
Blocks from my house. What appears in front of me but that same fucking Trump float, which had followed me 3,000 miles and two years away just to harass me.
That's right. That's what it's doing.
It's in California now, you guys.
Yeah. It's much like his administration.
Yeah, it's everywhere and it's destructive.
That's right. That's it.
And I want to know if other people have experienced this because obviously
Do you think
float
that these are just some sort of like, do you think these are like some sort of like a Trump mass produced?
I know, like
rinky
dink
in China that they're
but they look so homemade. Like it looked so homemade.
Yeah.
And it obviously requires you to have like a flatbed like hauling
Well,
I don't
many
know
of his
terms.
Supporters, I'm imagining, have those.
I mean, it seems like it. But I was just like, don't be on 7th Avenue in New York. Don't be on Fairfax.
No.
Get out of my safe places.
That's right.
Go drive around, all the way around Kansas.
Yeah.
All day, every day.
That's right.
Do you, you know? Yep. In Kansas, do whatever you want.
Yeah.
Don't be up in here chasing me from coast to coast just to make me scared.
That is something.
So I don't like that.
No.
I don't either.
I don't like that it exists at all, but I like it less that it's tracking you.
I know. I hope I'm not the only one. I hope other people are being tracked.
Yeah.
In any case, we begin, as we always do, with an update about Puerto Rico.
That's right.
And apparently, if you're to believe the fake facts, if you're to believe the official facts.
Right, the Rudy Giuliani version.
The Rudy Giuliani facts are out there, and full power's been restored. So good work, us. Let's leave. Let's get out of there.
Did it. Nailed it.
Unfortunately,
that's not
anecdotal
real.
Reports don't seem to back that up.
Yeah.
But PREPA is done.
Yeah. Oh, they did it.
I feel like they've been done and maybe
I know.
Just decided at a certain point that it would round things out if they just declared victory.
Because they sent out a statement last week and then also tweeted out like a real nice picture with like the last family to officially get power back.
Classic.
But everybody who's living in the
El Yunque
National Forest is like, hey, P.S., we don't have power, including like all of the businesses around there. And there is a bit of a thing where it's kind of like it might be the Forest Service job and not PREPA's to like get the power back on, but they're supposed to be like working together in conjunction. So like regardless of whether PREPA considers themselves completely done or not, like to say that all of Puerto Rico has power now.
It's a lie.
Is a lie.
It's a dirty lie.
Like, you can say we restored power to all of the people who we were technically supposed to restore power to.
Right.
But there's still a bunch of people who don't have power. And that's real. So, like, if you read a headline about how Puerto Rico is has their power fully restored and did not dig any further, then we're here to tell you that that is right. not real.
You were lied to.
You were lied to.
And yeah, I mean, while that's not unusual, it does feel like the headline could have been like,
oh, we're going to get to some
most of Puerto Rico.
We've got a lot of headline lying in this week's podcast, by the way.
The headline situation this week was out of control.
And not just headline, but actual reporting.
Yeah. Lying. If ever there was a week,
we're going to get to some
to be critical of the news.
Serious fake journalism exactly. here.
And we're not normally fake news advocates. You know?
We're normally not.
We're pretty up on the, you know, believing the news.
That's right. Yeah.
Not this week. In any case, but you'll be happy to know that since everything is solved in Puerto Rico.
Right. Since we did it.
We did it.
Yeah.
So we can just, FEMA can leave now.
Right.
We're done.
They have declared that it's no longer an emergency there or a disaster or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So they were doing a cost sharing situation for all of the cleanup and repairs and everything at 100%. And that time period where that was supposed to be happening is now up. And so they're just like, nope, we're not going to be doing that any longer.
Nope.
And Puerto Rico was like, but wait a minute.
Right.
So they're filing an appeal, but FEMA just basically sort of like declared themselves done and they were like, got it.
Yeah.
Nailed it.
FEMA, what this means is that the Puerto Rican government suddenly becomes responsible for 10% of the share of...
Right. So FEMA's only going down to... They're still going to cover 90% in these cost shares, but that's a lot of money, and especially for Puerto Rico, who doesn't have a dime.
Like, it sounds like not a large share, except that it's $100 million dollars
right.
of
that
necessary...
That 10% is going to mean $100 million.
And that's money that
they
absolutely need in order... You know, we're not talking about money like we can buy speedboats for everyone in Puerto Rico.
Right.
Like, we're talking about money that they need for infrastructure and that they need to, like...
Like, we already know that
schools
are a shit show there right now.
Exactly. Yeah. So this is reconstruction and recovery money still. So if they can't afford that, which they can't because they're in massive debt...
Right. They couldn't afford it before the hurricane.
Right. Exactly. So
now they definitely can't.
They extra can't now.
Extra can't.
They super can't.
Yeah.
But this last 2 weeks was filled with exciting and interesting election results.
Yes.
We begin with the election results of August 7th. Now,
right.
both of us...
And this is where a lot of our fake news reporting is going to come in.
Right both here. Of us heard the results coming out of the states that had either special elections or primaries on October 7th.
Right.
I mean, August 7th. That was Ohio, Kansas, Michigan, Missouri, and Washington.
Right.
And thought to ourselves, we're fucking killing it.
Right. And this was... The last podcast that we did was right before this, and I remember specifically saying, God, I hope these Bernie Sanders-backed people win, not because I really care who the governor of Michigan is, let's face it, but because I don't want to have to be reading all of the things that I know that I'm going to have to be reading on the morning after if those candidates don't win. And then they didn't win, and the things that I knew that I was going to have to be looking at the next morning materialized right in front of my eyeballs, like I knew that they would, and I had a real... dark Wednesday, not because of the results, because
which were great,
but
we felt great about the results,
right? Like, that's the thing. And
let's read the results, and
then
we'll
get into it, and then we'll editorialize, but we'll just tell you what happened.
Okay, so there was that special election in Ohio,
right?
Which is a Republican district that Trump won by 14 points,
right?
The candidate who was the Democrat that was running basically tied the Republican candidate in that district. They are the race still hasn't been called because they're currently still engaged in confusion about who won.
Right,
Balderson has the edge. The Republican has the edge.
By less than a percent. He's ahead by 0.8%. Yeah. They still have a bunch of provisional ballots and some
overseas.
Ballots to count. It's not enough for O'Connor, who's the Democrat, to overtake Balderson. But in Ohio, the state law is that anything within 0.5% triggers an automatic recount. So they think that these votes might get him basically like that 0.3% he would need to get to 0.5% to have an
And we should
recount.
Remind you that they are refighting this race in November. So
this is
meaningless.
Just, this is a practice race. Like, these two are on the ballot in November running against each other. I would contend that this was stupid that they did this, then it was a giant waste of taxpayer money to have this anyway.
But
I mean,
I think it's going to be great for the general election because I think Democrats will get out if they think they have a chance of winning.
Yeah.
And also, we want to talk about another phenomenon that's being ignored, which is that this 14-point swing, there's been a bunch of special election races where the swing has been in the ballpark of 14 points. And
some
of those races are in places where Trump won by like 20 or 24 points. And
that's right.
You know, the Democrat didn't ultimately win.
Right.
But this
And may still not again in November.
Right. But this has been a consistent trend. 14 points has been a consistent trend in multiple races.
A lot of double-digit
tons
swings.
Low teen double digit swings, a lot of 14 points specifically swings, in fact.
Right.
But like this has been an ongoing pattern. And while we don't expect this pattern to hold specifically in, you know, in
We're not going to say that, like, every single race is going to flip by 14%. But, like, even if you slice that in half, the Democrats get back the House by, like, a country mile. Yeah. Like, if you go to 7%. I think they only need to win anything that was within, like, a Trump plus three or something ridiculous exactly. like that. So, like, and I was talking to the Republicans know it. I hope they don't end up knowing it quite enough by right. the time that November rolls around. But I was talking to coworker who I love to talk politics with, who's a Republican, and we were talking about after this election. He was like, boy, that Ohio race. And I was like, yeah, I know. And he was like, I'm getting frantic emails from Karl Rove daily about about the November elections. It's just like panicked, like, we're going to lose the House by 70 seats.
Yeah.
Like, if this is a real trend.
And it has been so far.
And it has been a real trend. It's been going on for a while.
Yeah. And it's been, I think, underreported because a lot of these have been districts where the Republican advantage is huge.
Right, exactly.
But when you see a trend like that happening, even in a district where the Democrats were never going to win,
right.
that's meaningful.
Right, exactly. And I think it's going to be... it's going to be more meaningful in places where Democrats think that they might have a chance.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because I feel like if I were, I mean, obviously I vote in every election I can, but I can see a world where I'm a Democrat and I'm like, oh, Trump won this district by 20%. And I have had a Republican representing me since the beginning of time here. Like, do I really need to vote in this election?
Well,
but if you were in a district last year that Trump only won by 4 points, like, you're going to get yourself to voting and fast.
I can also see a world where a lot of those districts didn't have Democrats on the ballot until this year.
Totally.
And that, I think, is going to also be a significant... And a lot of those races may not turn out in the Democrats' favor, but that kind of familiarity takes a little while to build. It takes a while to kind of build a sort of established Democratic voting block in a place where you haven't done any outreach to voters in the past. Yeah. But that will be a meaningful long-term trend if that continues. So that's meaningful. Kansas... had just like a funny situation where Kris Kobach nearly lost his primary and then for a second was planning to oversee his own recount.
Yes. People were like, maybe you shouldn't be doing that.
Yeah.
Then he did ultimately, I think, recuse himself.
Yeah, because he had took to.
He thought that he didn't have to.
I mean, I know. But the two states that I think got the most attention in terms of progressive bashing that were to us the most exciting were Michigan and Missouri.
Yeah.
Now, in Michigan, we had a big gubernatorial primary happening.
Yeah.
And the progressive candidate that we had been excited about, Abdul El-Sayed, did not win.
Right.
And that got spun as like a massive loss
for progressives. Right, because it wasn't really actually that close.
Right.
But there was also sort of like another person in that race kind of fashioning himself as a progressive anyway. And when you added the two of those up, which I realize is a ridiculous thing to do, but I'm just saying, like, it was basically tied at that point. So it was not as if progressive ideals lost. And we're also going to come back to that in a second anyway, because this is one of the specific races that we're going to tell you that everything that you read was wrong about.
Correct. And then there was also Rashida Tlaib, who is would be the first Muslim American woman to serve in Congress. She won a primary in Michigan.
She's going to, that's a heavily Democratic district.
Yeah, like she's probably going to win that. Yeah. And then in Missouri, they voted down a right to work law.
I mean, hello.
This is the first time that we've seen the sort of the reverse of this anti-union trend that we saw in a lot of the Rust Belt and in a lot of the country for years. Yeah. This is, and I credit teachers unions with this because teachers unions are who are driving this new sort of excitement about unions. Yeah. But this is a huge deal that no one talked about, which is finally a state where they have sort of a significant history of a union, of union sort of union work, of union, of strong unions, being like, fuck this.
Yeah.
We don't.
Totally.
We don't want any more of this.
Claire McCaskill needs to get in there and hitch her wagon to that movement.
She won't. She's just awful. But here we are. In any case, we want to, though, talk about the headlines that we saw the next day about how the Sanders coalition is over and nothing, and the progressives aren't winning.
Oh, my God.
Progressives are fucking winning.
The headline on Politico the next day was literally like, Bernie Sanders should just go crawl in a hole and, like, never come out and be heard from again in this lifetime.
Yeah.
And, like, I get it. Did we want the candidates that he picked to win?
Sure.
Sure.
Sure we did.
But this is... So what we learned from the primary that he ran against Hillary Clinton is what is continues to drive all of these primaries and continues to drive where all of these candidates who are running are at politically. Mm-hmm. So people were talking about how Gretchen Whitmer, who is the person who won the Michigan Democratic primary for governor, you know, she was the establishment candidate. She was the status quo because she's been in the state Senate and blah, 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 blah. She came out huge for a $15 minimum wage. She wants universal free pre-kindergarten in the state. She oversaw the state's Medicaid expansion when she was in the House. And once she didn't come full out for Medicare for all, but she wants to expand that to more people within the state to basically give a ton more people access to free healthcare in the state. I mean, like, this is a person who, those are the ideas that Hillary Clinton wouldn't commit to less than 2 years ago. Yeah. And the reason that she is there is A, because we had that presidential primary, but B, in the subsequent 2 years, we have decided that that's where the party is at. So Bernie Sanders, yes, Abdul El-Sayed lost. Fact. Right. But the fact that the person who won as the establishment candidate was a sort of a lefty. I mean, not as far as maybe some lefties would want.
Well, the fact
that
the middle has moved to the left.
That's the thing.
That's the thing.
That's what...
That's winning.
That's the story.
Well, and there's another conversation I want to have too, which is that 2 years ago, we wouldn't have known Abdul El-Sayed's name. He would have gotten 5% of the vote, and only me and Brent would have known that he had run.
Right.
And only if we were in Michigan.
Right.
And we would have been complaining about how no one was taking him seriously and how the media didn't even name him in the story of who won that night. And we would not have had, no one else would have known who we were talking about.
Right.
Uh-huh. Because that's what we thought we were, when we decided we were going to support Bernie Sanders for president, that's what we thought was going to happen to us then. That's what we were getting involved in.
Right.
And that is because Brent and I have gotten involved in that every year for years.
No.
The thing that I think, you know, there's a lot of new interest in electoral politics right now, which is exciting, and there's a lot of new candidates, which is very exciting, and there's a lot of new progressive sort of energy, which is really exciting. But the one thing that progressives, lifelong progressives, know well is losing dramatically and in elaborate fashions.
Yeah.
We lose a lot.
Yeah.
And when, and because of that, I think we are well positioned to find victories in ways that other Democrats are not. So like a lot of the time people come to me and they're totally hopeless about the state of the world right now, which I can understand. And they think that Donald Trump is sort of the only force out there and is destroying us one by one.
Right.
And I keep being like, look at these local races. There are really exciting things happening at the local level. There is really exciting opportunities in all of this resistance that he's coming up against. There are people making connections. There are people running for office. We are running some of these Democrats who make us lose every year out.
Yeah.
Like, there are things that are happening. It's exciting out there right now. And if you weren't a progressive before or you weren't paying attention before, you probably don't have the context to realize how massive it is to have a candidate in a major gubernatorial primary who is admitted on the far left, is a Justice Democrat. You know, I mean, I know that organization is new, but that kind of, that genre of candidate didn't used to get above 5% of the vote.
Right.
This guy got in the 30s.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, this, we knew his name and he was the big headline of the night was that he didn't win.
Right.
But it was, he was named in the story.
That's right.
You know?
Yes.
Like that for a progressive is...
Yeah. Totally.
600 times what we would have expected to happen in any normal year.
Yeah, totally.
And I think that, you know, understandably, there's a lot of people who don't realize where this sort of strain of progressivism started. And so because of that, it's hard to kind of contextualize a lot of these results. And, you know, think the major media has an incentive to sort of understand what's going on and go with the status quo.
Totally.
So they also aren't equipped to report on this stuff because they didn't know these people's names until recently either.
Right.
So, you know, to them, they're like, well, they said he was a legitimate candidate, so why didn't he win? To us, it's like, oh my God, people knew the name of this guy.
Right, exactly.
Like, that is huge progress for the left.
Yeah.
And it also, you know, it shows that they're on the on the left right now, and by this I mean the larger left, what we're seeing is not really even a disagreement about principle anymore. What the far left won on that argument.
Yes.
We're seeing a disagreement about strategy. We're seeing a disagreement about whether it's okay to go with a sort of, you know, the approach where we kind of slowly build what, you know, towards what we want, or the approach where we name the thing at the end of the golden road, or, you know, the name, the end of the rainbow, and decide that we'll figure it out along the way.
Right.
Those are the two kind of strategies that we're pursuing. But the goal we're sort of realizing is the same for everyone.
Yes.
And we didn't used to know that.
Yeah. And
the
and
Democratic
part of the,
Party didn't used to know that.
Yeah. And I want to say part of the reason why we didn't know that 2 years ago is because the person leading the party was telling us that we couldn't.
Yeah. No, exactly.
So
and that has changed dramatically. That's what's different now and what's exciting now.
Yeah.
Is it's totally cool to be like, I'm a person who thinks Medicare for all is the way to go.
Exactly. And
maybe someone will be like, I don't think that's the right way because it'll scare people off or whatever. But it's not like, it doesn't disqualify you from politics right now to say the thing.
Yeah.
And it
not
used
only
to.
Does it, yeah. Not only does it not disqualify you, and another point to the fact that the Sanders wing has won, look at the people who are acting like they're going to be running for president.
Yeah.
No one is going to be taken seriously in a Democratic primary for president if they have not... The earliest person who came out for Medicare for All is going to be the person who wins the Democratic primary in 2020. Yeah. Whoever it was. I don't know who it was.
No.
But whoever it was...
That's the person.
And that's what they're going to run on, too. Mm-hmm. They're going to say, I said it first.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, they are.
Absolutely. I mean,
that's a campaign ad in a Democratic primary. So that... You have to look at it. You have to look at it in that context.
You need the context. You need to think about the context.
And Politico is not.
No.
So.
No, and they're not equipped to. The Times isn't equipped to. A lot of these news sources they've never been equipped to.
Right.
You know, this has always been one of our, and they do this on the right too. This is kind of how the Tea Party kind of snuck into our lives, was people on the right didn't know how to contextualize what was happening on the right. And so they got confused and they didn't report on it until it was too late. And then they didn't know what to do and it was chaos and these crazy people came along. And well, I would contend that we're not crazy.
Right.
And we're also not being financed by the Koch brothers. Yeah. So that helps.
Yeah.
But I mean,
but it's
a similar sort of the lack of information about what the larger trends have been and what it means to have a victory for the left.
Yeah.
Sort of don't correlate to the way that they report news.
Yep.
You know, they're not, that's not how they normally report news.
100%.
So it doesn't make sense. In any case, Hawaii voted on Saturday, August 11th, in a move that is bold and brash and exciting.
Right. If we're not going to have if we're not going to have Election Day as a national holiday, then
let's do it on the weekend.
At least do it on Saturday, for God's sake.
Yeah.
So good work, Hawaii.
Yeah. Hawaii, a state that's getting it. Who knew?
Yeah. Not me.
They had a sort of one race that went kind of as expected, but it was dicier than they would have hoped in a House race for David. Ige?
Yeah, no, that's, I believe, the governor's race.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's the governor's.
Yes.
No, but it was Tulsi Gabbard's race that was the House race that went as expected, but she got in a little hot water.
Yeah, well, I mean, and I get it. Like, she's one of the people who I sort of, like, always list as, like, a person that, like, we should be watching out for, like, maybe running for president because she's, like, an early Sanders endorser. She's a Medicare for All person. She is an Iraq war veteran. But she's a little wacky when it comes to foreign policy. She's, like, a huge isolationist. She has met, she got a lot
of
flack.
She's ex-military.
Yeah, and she got a lot of flack for, like, meeting with, Bashar al-Assad, and like, I mean, so she's got some things to work out, I think, before a presidential primary.
Correct.
But anyway, so, but some of those issues got her, and she wouldn't debate her opponents.
That,
in
I
this,
think, is the
which
always
I don't like
mistake.
This at all. But the teachers union endorsed her opponent, which she still won. I think she got like 83% of the vote or something like that. But like, she's got some, I hope she saw some signs there that are problematic for her if she has, ambitions beyond representing Hawaii in Congress, which I believe that she does.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So
one more note about that gubernatorial primary, because the reason that I remembered it is because this is the guy who told everyone in Hawaii that a ballistic missile was heading towards.
Right. Yeah.
He remember that scary?
Right. Yeah. He wasn't actually
the
guy.
He wasn't the actual guy, but it was his administration.
The handling of it was not a good look.
Yeah.
So and he barely won. He won 51-44. His likability. Or and popularity in the state like plummeted after that.
Well,
basically.
It would.
But he still.
Everyone in Hawaii thought that they
primary,
had to escape a ballistic missile.
Well, yeah, that's not what you're looking for.
That's not what you're looking for. And you want the governor's office to be like, we've got this, you guys.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
But that's not what happened.
No.
In any case, moving on to the August 14th. That is hard to say.
There it is.
Primaries. That's last Tuesday. Minnesota, Wisconsin, Kansas, Connecticut, and Vermont had primaries. And some exciting results out of that as well. It was a big night for women. It was a big Vermont. The Vermont gubernatorial primary was won by the first trans woman to win a major party.
The
primary.
Transgender.
As Fox News was calling
her the next morning.
Yes. But Ilhan Omar, who was the Somali American candidate that was running in Minnesota for Congress, she won.
Yep.
Tim Pawlenty lost his governor's race. Tim Pawlenty wants to be Jerry Brown.
Right.
But he's not.
He's been the governor multiple times already before.
And I
guess probably just been bored the last 10 years or however many years it's been since he's been governor.
Yeah. Yeah. He hasn't remained any more memorable.
No,
I mean, he hasn't gotten more memorable.
The only thing that he was ever memorable for was trying to be president with a mullet.
Yeah.
Like, that's all anybody knows Tim Pawlenty.
That's his claim to fame.
Yeah.
And having a silly name. I mean, he's like the kind of person whose name I've known since I first heard it, but who I could not pick out of a lineup even now.
Sure.
I could pick out his mullet phase in a lineup because I remember that.
Yeah, of course.
But I don't remember, like, if he presented himself to me now, if I was at, like, at a Republican fundraiser, and he was one of those generic people that just, like, bums around those things, because that's what ex-politicians always do.
Yeah.
I would not be able, like, if he came up to me, I wouldn't be like, oh, it's Tim Pawlenty. I would be like, here's a strange man.
Yeah. Also in Minnesota, Keith Ellison won his primary for attorney general.
That's right.
Even though he's sort of is in the midst of maybe having beaten his girlfriend and maybe not, she has a tape of it on her phone that she's won't release because she just doesn't want to.
We don't know what to feel about this right now.
No.
Because obviously he's a big Sanders surrogate and he's the person that we were supporting for DNC head. And so we feel a little conflicted about this. We were talking about that earlier.
Yeah, we were. And, you know, look, if he did it, then, like,
that's not great.
No, it's certainly not great, and he shouldn't be the attorney general. Yeah. And I am, you know, I had hoped that we were in a place where we would just be believing the women.
Right.
That this
happened. We're not, it turns out.
And it turns out that we're not. But also there's some weird things with her story that sort of are not really totally shaking out. So we don't know what to feel yet. We're just
watching and waiting.
Yeah. Anyway.
And then in Connecticut, they had a kind of exciting primary result where this woman is running for Congress, and she's actually running against another Democrat in the general because of some chaos. But Johanna Hayes would be the first Black woman to be elected in New England if she got elected. Mm-hmm. So that would be exciting.
Also, the Iron Stash won his primary in Wisconsin.
So I expected that only because he's the only person in that primary that could be named nationally by any single person who's ever read the news.
Yeah.
But I also thought it would be horribly embarrassing if he didn't win.
Well, and so there was... I was a little worried about that. Well, and there... It was... A woman ended up running against him in that primary, and he, having ran against Paul Ryan already before and, like, being sort of, like, on the national stage really because of a lot of the things that he was, like, saying, where he was just basically, like, rerunning against Paul Ryan again.
Yeah.
When Paul Ryan announced his retirement, that race
got kinda chaotic.
Some of its luster. So there were some people who thought that he could maybe lose just only because, like, his name recognition sort of, like, I mean, people in that district know him, but, like, at least nationally, like, the money stopped sort of, like, pouring in from people who wouldn't necessarily be caring about that race because people were paying attention because they wanted him to be the person who took down Paul Ryan, and that's not a thing anymore.
Although it would be great if that district was not taken by
flipped.
A Republican, guys.
Totally, yeah.
I mean, it'd be great if, it would be great if the district was flipped. Also, my favorite thing about Tuesday was re-remembering that Paul Ryan is leaving.
I know, right?
Because
isn't that exciting?
I had forgotten entirely about that because so many people are retiring that you can't keep track. And then when I was watching election results, I felt a surge of excitement, not about any results in the election, but about my re-remembering that Paul Ryan was leaving.
Yeah.
And was going to be out of our lives with his dumb face and his dumb muscle pictures.
Oh, thank God.
I mean, I'm never going to forget.
No, you can't unsee those.
I can't unsee them, but I do want fewer reminders that I once saw them. You know?
True.
In any case, we're here to bring you the news about what you really came to hear about.
Omarosa.
Yeah. This is today's latest, but we don't know what else is in store.
No,
you know?
You can't know.
I mean, you can't. She might have video. It's an evolving story as we go. Before we begin our coverage, I just want to point out that Fox News' headline about the whole kerfuffle was Omarosa book raises questions on what top paid White House official actually did. And you know what? Touche.
She didn't do anything. That's
obviously
what she
nothing.
Did. Nothing.
Why would you even report that was a question?
She was never supposed to be doing anything.
No, she was there to be there.
She was there to be a Black person.
Exactly. That was her job.
Yeah.
And I mean, she performed it as well as anyone can in that circumstance, I guess.
Although maybe not if you're
April Ryan.
April Ryan, because I was watching TMZ today.
He was in a doctor's office, you guys. Which is
not a thing that I normally do. And it was also weird that it was on in my doctor's office anyway.
That's amazing.
But what was weirder than anything was that April Ryan, like, actual journalist, was on being interviewed by Harvey Levin because, like, ooh. But apparently she has a book coming out. But she was, like, talking about politics and such. And I was like, well, this is weird. We now live in an America where, like, a real-life journalist is hawking a book on TMZ and talking about a former reality star person who was fired from the White House and now also has a book coming out about it. Like, it was just, it was all very, like, yeah, America. Like, here America, we are. America. Anyway, but she was, like, they asked her, their books are coming out around the same time, and so they asked her about what she thought about Omarosa, and she was like, well, she's probably not going to be invited to the church ice cream social. She's probably not going to be invited to the historically black college homecoming because she went to one.
Right.
Like, basically, it was just like, she's not invited to black events any longer, right. Omarosa. So while she performed being a black person as well as she could in the White House. Right.
As well as anyone could, really.
As well as anyone
given
could.
Given the circumstances.
Right. She might not have performed it to everyone's liking.
Surprise.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, that didn't stop MSNBC from airing Politics Nation with her and Al Sharpton in conversation.
That's right.
Al Sharpton periodically, often, makes choices that I question. Right. I'm just going to leave it at that. His choice sure. to appear on television with Omarosa, I think questionable.
Questionable.
Just broadly questionable.
Yeah. But we, of course, got some good news because every time Omarosa goes on the news, she has a new thing to say.
That's right.
And
she's been great, by the way.
Oh.
Her news tour has been the best thing about the week.
Yeah, absolutely. But she declared in that interview that Trump wants to start a race war, which is like, obviously.
Right.
Duh.
Some of the stuff has, yeah, a lot of the stuff also has been stuff where we're like, yeah.
Right, I know.
Duh. Yeah, she said he was disingenuous about his commitment to diversity.
Oh, really?
He could care less if African-American civil rights leaders, anyone, came to the table because he had his agenda, and that agenda did not include advancing and uniting the African-American community or even putting any policies in place that he promised during the campaign. He's a performer. He wants to use people as props.
Yeah.
Color like me when shocked.
Remember when he pointed at his black friend right. at the campaign rally when he was running? Like, I mean, specifically...
Yes.
We know that that is exactly what he wanted to do.
And then she was asked if she
that's
thought,
what you were, by the way, Omarosa.
Right? She was asked whether she thought Trump was a racist, and she said, yes, Donald Trump is.
Mm-hmm.
We all agreed.
Yeah, I believe that he wants to start a race war in this country.
Yeah.
She shouldn't elaborate on that point, but yeah. I feel like maybe he's done a good job at starting one. I feel like it maybe is the only successful
that's true.
Policy that he's put he's into place.
That's yeah. true. If there was one thing that I could say he's done a good job at in that he's done it successfully. It's
right.
potentially that.
Yeah.
Although maybe not even that, because maybe he's just right. started a civil war. I don't know that it's even a race war
right, sure.
in that it is certainly, one side yeah. of it is certainly racists.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
the other side of it, I feel like, is more just like confused and attacked on many fronts.
Yeah.
Not sure they want to be involved.
Yeah.
But there were other excitement.
Right.
There were other exciting things that Omarosa
right.
released.
Right. So she's had a lot of tapes. And one of the tapes that she released was a tape of Laura Trump, one of the Trump son's wives.
Eric. No one cares about Eric.
Right. Asking her to come back to the 2020 reelection campaign, but that she would have to keep her mouth shut, yep. basically. Which
it was
she
touch
took,
money.
She took as... like them giving her a job to go back on the campaign trail to not say anything
yeah.
bad.
I would maybe yeah. accept that job for $15,000 a month, which is what they were offering.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, admittedly, yeah. I don't have as much that they're trying yeah. to cover up.
Yeah.
But yeah, the great thing about all of this is that she keeps teasing stuff and then everyone is like, nope, didn't happen. And then she keeps releasing tapes.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, don't
if we've
fuck
learned
with
anything
her.
From Nixon... which I have right. been thinking about a lot because Slow Burn came back.
Yeah.
It's don't think that you're in the White House not being taped.
Yeah, well, and
ever.
Also...
just
thing,
assume you're
right.
on tape.
And especially by Omarosa, because, like, it does not shock me at all that she has tapes. And the reason that it doesn't shock me that she has tapes is because, you know, I think that Omarosa has sort of an inflated and incorrect image of... who she actually is in the world. I think she's delusional,
sure.
and I think she's probably at
well,
least
she's a reality star.
A little bit deranged.
Yeah.
But I think that she's only so crazy because she knows that she's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you can't be that crazy if you know
right.
that you're crazy.
Right.
And I think that she knew that at some point she was either going to get fired or she was going to have to leave in a huff because of something awful happening. And that the thing that they were going to do was to try and discredit her as a known crazy person, because we've all seen her crazy on television for a decade, basically.
Yeah.
So she was like, all right, well, they're going to call me crazy. They're going to say that I'm lying. They're going to say that I made everything up. So the only way to fight this is to have the receipts.
Yeah.
And so she does.
That's right.
So at least multiple times in the last week, she has teased something that somebody has said to her.
Right.
They have released a statement that nothing of the sort happened. And then 12 hours later, we were hearing the words of that person say the things that she said that they said on the news because she had tape recorded it.
Yeah.
So if you're a person watching the news and Omarosa is talking about you and a conversation that you had, don't hot tip. Don't release a statement that said it didn't happen, because it did and she recorded you having it.
That's right. This is an ongoing problem in the White House, you guys.
Yeah.
Because the second thing I've learned from Slow Burn Season 2 is that the Monica Lewinsky scandal also related to secret tapes. About secret tapes in the entire White House. Assume you're on record when you're in the White House. Right. And then if you say something dumb, sure, we all do it, especially in the Trump White House. They do it all the time.
Right.
Know that you said something dumb. Right. Find a way to say that you said it, but you're sorry, or you said it, but you didn't know what you were saying, or find another way to deny it.
Yeah.
Don't say definitively that you didn't say it, because you did say it.
That's right.
She also taped John Kelly in the Situation Room firing her.
Right. And then Trump pretending like he had no idea that that was going to happen.
That's right.
Which clearly he did. I mean,
said nobody ever told me about it. You know, they run a big operation, but I don't know it. I didn't know that. Damn. I don't love you leaving at all.
No. Makes me so sad.
Then he went on a crazy Twitter takedown of her.
Yeah.
After the tapes came out of him not wanting her to leave.
Yeah.
Let's just read the whole tweet, because it's a great one.
I mean, it's two tweets, obviously.
Yeah. Because it's 1,000 hours long. Here it is. Wacky Omarosa, who got fired 3 times on The Apprentice, now got fired for the last time. We'll see. She never made it.
Unless she comes back to my 2020 re-election campaign.
She never made it. Never will. She begged me for a job. Tears in her eyes. I said, okay. People in the White House hated her. She was vicious, but not smart. I would rarely see her, but heard, next tweet, really bad things. Nasty to people and would constantly miss meetings and work. Of course, we don't know what her job was, so it doesn't matter. When General Kelly came on board, he told me she was a loser and nothing but problems. I told him to try working it out if possible, because she only said great things about me until she got fired.
Yeah, that's right.
And here's the thing.
I love that the only thing that he cared about was that she was saying nice things about him in the press.
Right. And that's
it didn't matter whether she was bad at her job or a problem or a loser or whatever it was that everybody was telling her.
Work it out, because she's saying nice things about me in the press. It's good for ratings. I like that he doesn't see how having to fire her 3 times does not make her a risky hire in this circumstance.
That's the thing. And you know what? For maybe the first time in the history of his entire tweeting, I believe the things in that tweet.
Sure.
And the reason that I believe them is because I'm a person who has lived in a world where I knew of Omarosa.
Yeah, right.
So that begs the question, what the fuck is she doing wandering around the White House? Around the White House.
Why wasn't he living in that world, considering that he was appearing with her when she did these things the last time?
That's right.
You know? He also called her a dog and a lowlife later in the week. Here's the thing. Stop using racist insults to insult people you hate. Just use regular insults.
That's right.
Call her wacky.
Loser.
Call her a loser.
You already set the stage.
Exactly.
Right.
That was the right way to go.
Yeah.
You know, people can disagree if she's a loser or not. That's fine. But at least you didn't say anything that you can't sort of take the context back for.
That's right. Yeah.
You've got to stop with the racist insults.
Yeah.
That's just, I know you're trying to start a race war.
Right.
Fine. I get it.
Yeah.
But just like, let's dial it back. Just be presidential enough to call them a loser. Right. Speaking of, we got to panic again about whether there's a tape of him saying the N-word. Here's what I want to say before we begin this conversation. He did it. I don't need a tape to prove to me that he did it. I believe he did it.
He has done it so many times in my own fever dreams.
Yeah.
And you know what? It never sounded wrong coming out of his mouth.
He's definitely said it. His father was in the Ku Klux Klan.
Flowed off the tongue.
Like,
he was discriminating against black people in housing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He grew up in a racist family.
Right.
With racism.
That's right.
So, Let's not even worry about it.
Right.
The question is not whether or not he says it.
Right.
Obviously he said it.
Of course.
I don't even need the proof to know. Like, it's like we were saying, I think we were saying this during the Cohen investigation, where you don't need the proof. You need, you know the fact intuitively, and sometimes right. you have to work your way backward to prove right. the fact that you
yes,
already knew.
Yes, we talked
knew.
About this on the last podcast, like the yeah. anti-scientific method.
Exactly. Yeah. We're yes. we're operating on the anti-scientific method right now. We right. know he said the N-word.
Right. We don't need to prove that he did it. No. I mean, we can try if we want, but we can also go into that process knowing...
with the assumption that it's true. That's we right. don't have to decide that he's innocent until proven guilty correct. On this
no.
count.
You said it.
We know it.
Yeah.
The common sense is always true with this guy. Yeah. In any case. But there is a hilarious exchange about the tape in Omarosa's tapes.
Yes. Where... because she claims in her book that he said it, but that she had not herself heard it.
Right.
But now she's out on this tour, and since the publication of this book, she is now claiming that she is that she has heard it.
That the owner,
the
of, the
owner
tape
of the tape will
it.
Not release it because she's afraid of, quote, she said, is afraid
forces
because of the forces
to
working
it.
To stop it, and also because people are trying to leverage it for an October surprise before the midterm elections, which would seem like, I mean, I guess it would be damning in the sense that, like, to actually hear it would be a thing, but, like, it's not gonna...
yeah, the only thing not, I think I just, that like, it would buy everyone is that Trump supporters would not be able to deny that he said it.
That's true.
The rest of us already
well, they would.
Know.
He's been denying that that wasn't him saying
I mean,
that he
true.
Grabbed women's pussies.
That's true.
So,
but I mean, like, that's the kind of thing where, like,
yeah,
the only thing it helps is that people who are literally stuck in a weird conspiracy,
yeah,
who are like in a cult,
yeah,
are kind of forced to be like, oh
right.
fuck,
yeah. Yeah.
You know, that's all. And they won't yeah. change their minds.
Right. No, not
but
at all.
But they're just going to not be able to say,
yeah,
well, you're just, it's just a, you know, it, this is just a witch hunt, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Because he's going to have said it.
Right.
But
and now,
the rest of us already know, so
right.
we don't need to know.
And this is one of the specific times where a lot of people were like, no, there's a conversation that never happened between a huge group of people that then was,
turned
you know,
out to
the
have
next
happened.
Day, it definitely happened because we heard the tapes. Because Omarosa released a tape of a phone conversation where she speaks about the possibility of this N-word tapes
tape.
Release with Lynn Patton, who was then an aide to Eric Trump, and the campaign communications director Jason Miller, and the campaign spokeswoman Katrina Pearson. And they were all basically just discussing how to
deal with it coming
how
out.
How to deal with the coming
not
out of
how
this tape.
How to wonder if it exists.
Right, right, exactly. Now, none of the people talk about having heard it.
Right.
Or anything like that. But they were, if you look at the transcript or if you've just actually heard it, they're speaking very directly as what to do
when
it does
it
get heard by
yeah.
everyone. Yeah. So, you know, yikes.
Yeah.
It's out there.
It's out there.
Yeah.
But here's the thing for you, listener to Brain Trust Live, to know.
Right.
You know.
Right. Just imagine him saying it in your own brain.
You did it.
And that's basically the tape.
Yeah. It took no imagination at all for me to imagine what had happened.
No, I just heard him say it.
I just heard him say it and I thought, yeah.
Yep.
That's it.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's it.
Meanwhile, in other dictatorial news, Trump is now going around revoking security clearances of his enemies.
Yeah.
And so this week he revoked John Brennan, former CIA director's security
yeah.
clearance, which the reason that John Brennan has a security clearance, aside from having been a lifelong CIA operative,
right.
Is in order to assist the incoming administration with things,
yeah.
your old CIA people get to keep their clearances because there are matters that come up at times that you
yeah.
were not there for the beginning of if you
right.
are the new CIA people.
That's right.
And so he is somebody who is there to provide continuity.
Right.
You know, that's what his situation is
right
now. Unless he doesn't have clearance to hear about your deep state secrets.
Right.
In which case he can't. But Trump is now talking about revoking security clearances for a whole list
everybody.
Of other people.
Right.
Bruce Orr, who
Susan
was
Rice.
The Justice Department official, Susan Rice, right?
Yep.
And P.S. I have friends in Washington who have not worked with Susan Rice, but have dealt with Susan Rice in an official capacity. And all of them have given me the impression that Susan Rice is not someone to be fucked with.
Oh, I
Susan Rice
believe that.
Is not who you'd even decide to name in public if you're not ready for
right.
Susan Rice.
Keep her name out your mouth.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that one, I was like, go ahead, Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Try to revoke Susan Rice's security clearance.
Yeah.
But so in any case, this John Brennan is now all over the press, which... he didn't have to be if his security clearance wasn't revoked.
No. That's
talking
right.
about how this is an abuse of power and how he's going to consider legal action to stop Trump from doing it to other people And apparently, so according to the Washington Post, the White House has drafted these documents to like, they're in process of figuring out how to revoke these security clearances. They're not how to, but when to revoke these security clearances of other people, because they want to do it to distract everyone at convenient times. But at this point, there are three official letters slamming the president.
Yeah.
All of them bipartisan.
That's what I was just about to say. From, like, the most non-political people out there.
Yes.
And you can talk about whether you think people in the...
In the deep state
have politics or not. But, like, some of these people are, like, people who have literally been lifelong, like, military and...
CIA and thing.
And have never once spoken about anything political, like, publicly ever in their lifetimes. Yeah.
The first letter is signed by 13 officials. That includes 7 CIA directors or directors of Central Intelligence and a former director of National Intelligence.
Yeah.
The second letter is like 60 or 70 former CIA officials.
Yeah.
The third letter, which just was this morning, was signed by 177 former national security officials.
Yeah.
And it includes, it's bipartisan, it includes former officials from the State Department, Defense Department, Justice, CIA, and NSC, a bunch of agencies.
Everybody.
More than 10 former U.S. ambassadors, more than 20 former U.S. attorneys.
Yeah.
And here's the thing I want to leave Donald Trump with at the end of this story.
Yeah.
Which is, we've warned you about this before.
Yeah.
But don't go to war with the deep state. If you believe that the deep state is there and is a conspiracy.
Right.
And maybe they are. I don't know.
Don't poke the bear.
Don't poke the bear. Yeah. It is, he has repeatedly poked the bear. Yeah. And by the way, every embarrassing thing we know about him has come from those
I know.
Pokings. Right. But I mean, these are just not the people that you, and listen, I have my feelings about that because I don't necessarily like that a bunch of intelligence officials, you know, are there able to.
Might be secretly doing these things.
Right, or in a secret conspiracy or whatnot. You know, I don't like the idea of a deep state more than as much as anyone else doesn't like the idea. You know, I get,
sure.
I get that we all have trouble with that.
Right.
But I just feel like if you are Donald Trump, and maybe if you're a smart person, I feel differently. You know, I don't know how I feel about a smart person poking the bear.
Yeah.
But if you are Donald Trump, and you want to be loved.
Right.
Don't piss off the one group of people that knows all your dirty laundry.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. And the other thing that I want to say about this before we leave the story is that this is a thing to be terrified about.
Yes.
By the way, guys. Like, we're sort of, you know, telling you the facts and we're laughing about it because we're trying to find the humor in it. But literally, you know, decades from now, when we have to tell our children what the signs were that we were moving to an authoritarian state, like, and when Donald Trump is entering his 30th year as dear leader, this is a story that you can pick out of your pocket to say, well, we should have known when we listened to Brain Trust Live tell us about John Brennan.
Do you think that we'll get
having
to
a security clearance
keep
taken
him
away
as dear leader posthumously, because he's definitely not going to survive 30 years.
No, he's not. No. Although, his doctor said he could.
That's true.
Remember?
His doctor, who later admitted
Bonnie
that
Jackson. He...
his doctor, who has an alcoholism problem, who later admitted he just loves the president too much.
Said if he would stop eating fast food, he could just live until he was 200.
The if he would stop eating fast food point
world?
Was the key.
That was the kicker, yeah.
Because he's not going to do it.
No.
And also, because we know his former doctor was lying for him, we also know that doctors don't tend to tell the truth publicly when it comes to Donald Trump.
Yeah, sure.
In any case. But yeah, anyway. this is a both a concerning thing and also... Oh, the next thing we're going to talk about is concerning too, in a different way. But also, this is one of the things that fascist or authoritarian leaders do at the beginning in order to sort of get rid of their enemies. But this is also exactly who takes down those fascist leaders when they're dumb.
That's right.
And this is, we're talking about a dumb person here, which is why I say to him, don't be a fool. I mean, you are, in many ways, unable to stop yourself from being a fool, but, like, just don't be more of a fool than you need to be.
That's right.
Call Omarosa a loser till the cows come home.
Yeah.
Don't worry about John Brennan. Just let him do his thing. Just don't even talk to him. Don't talk about him. Don't hear about him.
Yeah. Yep.
Just, like, move on with your life.
That's right.
Because John Brennan only releases those secrets when he has no security clearance, so he has nothing else to do.
Yeah.
Before, he was too busy for that.
Yeah.
In any case, we're getting closer and closer to Michael Cohen getting indicted on bank fraud charges.
Ooh,
so that's
exciting. And big time, too. It's like $20 million or something, right? I mean...
And here's what I have to say about that. This is when you turn.
Oh, he is going to sing.
Michael
Cohen
has secrets.
Yeah.
And he is dying to share those secrets in exchange for a lessening of the sentence. I was going
to
say,
he's becoming more dying to share them by the day.
Yeah. This is the most sherry he's ever felt in his life. And here's what I'm excited about.
Yeah, speaking of feeling sherry.
Which is, well, I'm excited that Michael Cohen also, as a fixer on the New York scene, probably has secrets about other people too. Oh, yeah. And I want to know what those secrets are.
Yeah,
you know?
Totally.
That's a larger point.
Yeah.
But also, Don McGahn, the White House counsel.
Yeah.
Or former White House counsel, I guess, right? He's gone, right? Has apparently been cooperating extensively with Mueller's investigation.
Yeah, 30 hours. 30 hours. He spent with them.
Is he still with the White House, though?
I thought he was.
Maybe he is.
I don't know. Who knows?
I can't keep track of who's still there and who's not. I think he might be, too, now that I'm thinking about it.
Yeah. But you know what? This should be. This is. I got to thinking about this where I was just sort of like, holy shit. And then my second thought was like, how many reports have we heard about, like, self-preservation in the White House?
Yeah.
Especially in this specific administration where everyone is basically just sort of like fearing for their own, whether it's job, their own reputation. Everybody is willing to knife each other in the back. Like, of course he's working with Mueller. He probably relished it because he was like, I'm going to be on the good of this here when the shit hits the fan, which is going to happen is happening now. I don't know. But
people have specifically noted that what he doesn't want to become is John Dean. Because he doesn't want to end up facing criminal charges himself.
Right.
So he's trying to sing early so that he doesn't sing too late.
That's right.
If you will.
Yeah.
If we want to talk like gangsters, half. But he's been talking about the Trump's, quote, comments and actions during the Comey firing.
Sure.
He has been talking about Trump's various attempts to get Sessions to take control back of the Russia probe.
Yeah.
This was part of an earlier strategy by the ex-White House counsel, John Dowd and Ty Cobb, who had wanted the administration to cooperate with the Mueller investigation to look completely like they were on the up and up.
Yep.
And so that was how these Don McGahn interviews ended up happening.
Yeah.
But I would imagine he's also thinking to himself, how do I protect myself in this situation?
100%.
This is dicey.
100%.
And Trump did not invoke executive privilege to block McGahn or any of his aides from speaking to the special counsel as part of that earlier strategy.
Yeah.
And he also didn't invoke attorney-client privilege with McGahn, which is fine because he doesn't know what that is.
Oh, it wouldn't surprise me if we start hearing more stories of other people in the White House doing the same thing. Don McGahn is problematic because he was a lawyer, so he has, I think, a lot of the information that they are not going to want Mueller to have. But, you know, I mean, didn't we find out? Didn't Omarosa talk? I mean,
no, exactly.
What the hell? She doesn't know anything anyway. But I mean, but she's got tapes, so she knows some things. But I mean, like, why wouldn't they all?
Exactly. The reports about this literally say, and that John Dean reference was not for nothing because I thought of it as I was reading the story and then it came back to haunt me, where it said, worried that Mr. Trump would ultimately blame him in the inquiry, Mr. McGahn told people he was determined to avoid the fate of the White House counsel for the president, Richard M. Nixon, John W. Dean, who pleaded guilty to conspiracy and obstruct justice in the Watergate scandal. This, what they are trying to do, and it has felt more Watergate-y by the moment.
Oh,
this week
sure.
has for some reason felt very Watergate. Like every week I'm like, it feels like more Watergate-y to
me.
But this, you know, these constant references to Watergate are for a reason, and it's because people are looking at Watergate, and a lot of Republicans in Washington were serving Nixon in his administration at the time of Watergate anyway.
Yeah.
But people are looking at Watergate as reference for what to do in this situation.
Yeah.
Which is not what you're looking for.
Nope.
In a presidency.
No.
People that have to constantly reference Watergate. For his part, Trump feels very much like Nixon was wronged. And constantly talks about this.
Oh, he does. He totally does.
He's really obsessed with how wronged Nixon was.
Yeah, you know who else feels that way, by the way? It's a complete side note, but Brett Kavanaugh.
That sounds right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's one of the more interesting things about all of this is Watergate is very present in the conversation about this Mueller probe. But part of it that makes it so suspicious is that Trump is so angry about what happened to Nixon. And his aides are doing exactly what Nixon's aides ultimately did.
Yeah.
Because they had to protect themselves.
Yeah.
Because Nixon was a criminal. In any case, doing his due diligence, Trump tweeted that the report was a fake story in the New York Times.
That's right.
And then he tried to make him sound like a martyr because he said, I have nothing to hide and have demanded transparency so this rigged and disgusting witch hunt can come to a close.
Gosh. He also called it McCarthyism at its worst.
Which is amazing.
Which is hilarious. Yeah.
But, so, in any case, I think there's a few funny things about the story in the end. One being that Trump's lawyers apparently didn't know how much McGahn had told Mueller and only thought to ask after the New York Times story reporting it initially came out.
Right.
The other thing, and this is, I promise, my last slow burn reference.
It won't be. Don't evening. Promise. Don't, oh, maybe of the evening. But yeah. certainly oh. not, because the new season just started. So
I'm
we're
obsessed,
in a,
you guys.
We're in a you settle in for slow burn
yeah.
references.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm also listening to it, and it's amazing. So.
I told Brent that he had to listen to it, because otherwise I was going to spoil it for him, because I was just going to talk about it nonstop. In any case, I have a much better understanding of one specific thing about this story, thanks to slow burn, because they did an episode about Vince Foster.
Yeah.
You remember Vince Foster as the person that Hillary Clinton
right,
apparently
killed?
Yeah. But Vince Foster was White House counsel. And as White House counsel, his job, as I learned on Slow Burn, was not to be Bill Clinton's personal lawyer, but to protect the office of the presidency.
Right.
And that distinction is very important in this situation,
right.
because one thing that Trump doesn't seem to understand about Don McGahn is that his job is not to protect Trump personally. He is not Trump's personal counsel.
Right.
It is to protect the office of the presidency.
Right.
And that is a very different thing
yeah.
when the president has committed treason.
Right. And it was tricky for Vince Foster, because Vince Foster had been their personal lawyer.
Correct. Yes. That's what we learned on Slow Burn. You guys, you should definitely listen to Slow Burn. It's
yeah.
about the Clinton scandal, and it's amazing.
Yeah. And if you were one of the people in America, and I would contend that you probably were one of the people in America who did not know what Whitewater was, because who could possibly know what Whitewater
was? No one could
have
known.
You'll know. So then you can be a person walking around knowing what Whitewater was.
I have
which
been
is
pretending
a spectacular thing.
My whole life to
yeah,
know
of course.
What Whitewater was.
That's what
was.
Everybody's doing.
Yeah, everyone in America has been doing
especially
it.
Especially Republicans are really
oh, yeah.
doing it.
Because
like,
it couldn't
but
have
now,
been dumber.
But now when a Republican is like, but Whitewater, you can tell them how stupid they're acting. Because like, A, they won't be able to explain it to you.
No.
B, it's a,
couldn't
like
be dumber.
A nothing burker. As a
dumbest scandal. Real dumb scandal.
Yeah, and yeah. And just knowing is, you know.
It's fun.
Then you know.
Then you know.
Knowing
yeah,
is fun.
Exactly.
That's right. Yeah.
But in any case, to round out my Nixon references, after
sure.
my repeat slow burn references, yeah. the New York Times' Peter Baker actually said in a story this week, the week started with an enemies list, then came secret White House tapes, and it finishes with a White House counsel spilling to a special prosecutor. So everyone is getting
yeah.
that Watergate is happening now.
Yeah. Yep.
So in any case, Trump is obsessed with John Dean. McGahn
yeah.
obviously doesn't want to become John Dean.
John Dean
got thrown under the bus. John Dean was on the news.
On the news this week?
Exactly.
Right.
And apparently, Michael Cohen's attorney says that Cohen has been reaching out regularly to Dean over the past few months.
Yeah.
So there are so many things.
Yeah.
Slow Burn couldn't have come at a better time. That's my last Slow Burn reference of the night.
You see, I knew you lied
but
earlier.
But we finally, like, isn't it so nice to know as much about Watergate as we now know, as people who couldn't have lived through it? So we only knew the history book version of Watergate
right.
just in time for this to happen.
Yeah.
Isn't it? I always say to people that the thing about reading the news that you don't realize until you start doing it is that you're missing a lot of hilarious jokes.
Yes.
And this is like that. Like, we're suddenly in on the joke of this, and we're
right.
not 65, you know?
Well, right. Yes, exactly. No, it's
I feel
totally true.
It's so empowering to be in on the Watergate jokes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love it. Read the news, you guys. It's great.
Yeah.
And in final news.
Oh, boy.
Rudy Giuliani left us with the greatest meme of the week.
Yeah. And,
as often
Chuck,
is the case.
And Chuck Todd warned him.
That's
I mean,
right.
he warned him after he already said it. But
oh,
so that
himself.
Was too late, I guess. But
yeah, so
yeah.
there, Trump, he was on Meet the Press, Giuliani was on Meet
yeah.
the Press talking about Don McGahn and how he was a strong witness for the president,
yes.
blah, blah, blah. But then Giuliani said that Trump could be, quote, trapped into perjury
right.
by if, you know, if he offers a statement at odds
right.
with someone else Mueller interviewed, like James Comey.
Right. So.
And so.
But Chuck Todd was basically like, well, if he tells the truth, then he's not going to be trapped into perjury
right.
because he'll tell the truth. And then what perjury is when you have lied about something
right.
under oath. So if he's in there not doing that, then he
then
won't be perjuring himself. Right.
So then Giuliani says that anything that Trump or Comey told Mueller would be somebody's version of the truth, not
mm-hmm.
the truth. So Todd said, truth is truth. And Giuliani said, no, it isn't. Truth isn't truth. So that explains a lot
yeah.
about their legal strategy and a lot about their method of governing.
Well, I was going to say, it's been, we've
they've,
known this for a
yeah,
long time.
They've
I
lied
mean, they
about
just,
things as insignificant as the weather.
Right, that's right.
I mean,
yes.
they've lied about crowd size.
Uh-huh.
The truth is not the truth when it comes
no,
to them. They're,
it's not.
And
it's alternative facts.
Alternative facts, exactly.
Yeah.
If we've learned, if they warned us about anything early on, it was that the truth was not going to be the truth under a Donald Trump presidency.
That's right.
And they have held to that.
Right. The problem is
that the truth
for
is
them
the truth.
Is that the truth is the truth. But whereas the truth doesn't necessarily have to be the truth in politics, because look, I get it. Sometimes it isn't.
Right. Of course. Yeah.
But it is generally that way. Once you start getting to the courts,
yeah,
the truth becomes more like the truth.
When you start having legal scandals
right,
that have to do
then
with...
Then you want the truth to be the truth.
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
I mean, they don't want the truth to be the truth, but it will become necessary for them.
Especially if everyone's walking around the White House secretly taping everyone.
That's right.
Which, P.S., they
probably
always
another reason why
are.
He doesn't want it. Yeah, exactly. Another reason why he doesn't want to go and do this interview, because... Yeah. He's, of course, going to say something that somebody has the receipts for.
Obviously.
Yeah.
Because they're all, none of them trust each other. They shouldn't. All of them are secretly recording each other, which is the case in every presidency, as we've learned.
Right.
Just don't, like, not saying anything is his only option here, really. Because he can't lie about it.
Yeah.
I mean, he'll try to lie about it, but
he has to pretend like he's willing to do it.
Of course, yeah.
To make it seem like he's on the up and up. With the whole thing,
he
and then he has
it.
Nothing to hide, but no, he can't. There's no, I would bet the farm that there is no Trump Mueller interview happening ever.
Yeah. And if ever does do it,
it'll be after he's already been impeached.
Correct. I was going to say he's already in trouble.
And there'd be no reason for it other than maybe like some good ratings
or something. I think it's maybe as an opportunity to get him a TV show. Like I could see a world in which he needs the press.
Right.
You know? But that's the only time I can see him doing it.
Yeah.
If he needs the ratings.
Right.
It's for ratings. It's all for ratings.
Yeah. They can do it from prison.
That's right. He'll never go to prison, Brent.
Oh, boy.
Think about who goes to prison.
Well, that's true. Yes.
It's never Donald Trump.
No, it's not Donald Trump.
None of the times that...
He's too rich and too white.
That's right. And yet, somehow, not rich enough or white enough. It's
oh, he's white enough. Rich enough.
I feel like, though, he's like... He's not white enough in the sense of whiteness being power as opposed to whiteness being whiteness as opposed to, like, Aryan-ness.
Sure.
Is he
sure.
an Aryan man? Sure.
Yes.
Definitely.
No, I get what you're saying.
But whiteness as power is a different kind of, a different read on whiteness, and it's probably a more accurate read on whiteness. And he's déclassé, you know?
So true.
He's tacky.
Yep.
He's an idiot from Queens.
Yep.
So, we'll leave you there. we're going to not... This time around, but pretty soon we're going to be going back to our regularly scheduled programming of weekly, and especially as we get into the deep into the election cycle, you're going to want to be hearing from us more.
That's right.
Because
this is what we do.
This is what we do. This is our whole lives.
Yeah.
But so we will be back in 2 weeks, but then after that we will probably be back in your ears just nonstop.
Yeah. You'll love it.
You'll love it. You'll love every moment of it. We'll talk to you in 2 weeks.
Bye.
Bye. We'll be right back.